Avon. Matty looks at him. Come on, Si. Didn't he jump to the wrong fucking conclusions? What happened to the bairns now to do with the skag? It's no Leslie's fault either. I was out of order saying that. She was a good mother. She loved that bairn. It's nobody's fault. Caught death and that. Happens all the time. Yeah, life's a caught death, man. Ken what I mean? Spud agreed. I feel that I love them all. Matty, Spud, Sick Boy and Leslie. I want to tell them. I try, but it comes out as... I'm cooking. They look at us, fucking scooby'd. That's me. I shrug my shoulders in self-justification. I go bend the living room. This is murder. Leslie, I'm fucking useless at these things. Less than useless in this condition. Of negative utility. Leslie's never moved. I feel that I should maybe go and comfort her, put my arm around her. But my bones feel twisted and scraped. I couldn't touch anybody right now. Instead, I babble. Really sorry, Les. Nobody's fault, though. Caught death in that. We don't. Barry, we bairn, fucking shame. Fucking sin, man, I'm telling you. Leslie lifts her head up and looks at us. Her thin white face is like a skull wrapped in milky cling film. Her eyes are red raw, circled with black rings. You cooking? I need a shot, Mark. I really need a fucking shot. Come on, Marky. Cook us up a shot. At last I could be of some practical help. There were syringes and needles lying all over the place. I tried to remember which works were mine. Sick Boy says that he'd never ever share with any cunt. That's shite. When you're feeling like I am, the truth is that you dinna care too much. I take the nearest, which at least isn't Spud's, as he's been sitting now at the other side of the room. If Spud isn't HIV positive by now, then the government should send a deputation of statisticians doon to Leith, because the laws of probability aren't operating properly here. I produce my spoon, lighter and cotton balls, as well as some of this fucking vim or Ajax that Seeker has the audacity to call smack. We're joined in the room by the punters. Back out my fucking light, boys, I snap, gesturing the cunts away with backward sweeps of my hand. I know I'm playing at being the man, and part of us hates myself, because it's horrible when some cunt does it to you. Nobody, though, could ever be in this position and then deny the proposition that absolute power corrupts. The gadgies move a few steps back and watch in silence as I cook. The fuckers will have to wait. Leslie comes first. After me. That goes without saying. Junk Dilemmas number 64.
Mark! Mark! Answer the door! I ken you're in there, son! I ken you're in there!
It's my ma. It's been quite a while since I've seen ma. I'm lying here, just a few feet from the door, which leads to a narrow hallway which leads to another door. Behind that door is my mother.
Mark! Please, son, please! Answer the door! It's your mother, Mark! Answer the door!
It sounds like Ma's greeting. It sounded like door. I love Ma. Love her too much, but in a way which is hard for us to define. A way which makes it difficult, almost impossible, to ever actually tell her. But I love her nonetheless. So much that I don't want her to have a son like me. I wish I could find her a replacement. I wish that because I don't think change is an option for us. I can't go to the door. No chance. Instead, I decide to cook up another shot. My pain centres say that it's yon time already. Already, Christ, life doesn't get any easier. This smack has too much shite in it. You can tell by the way it's no dissolving properly. Fuck that cunt seeker! I'll have to look in on the old lady and the old man sometime. See how they're doing. I'll make that visit a priority. After I see that cunt seeker, of course. Chapter 7. Her Man. For fuck's sake. We just come out for a quick drink. This is pure fucking mental. Did you see that? Fucking out of order, Tommy says. No, fucking leave it, man. Didn't he get involved? You didn't ken the score, I says to him. I saw it, though. Clear as day. He hit her. No fucking slap or nout like that, but a punch. It was horrible. I'm glad that Tommy's sitting beside them, no me. Cause I fucking says, that's fucking how. The boy's shouting at her again. Nobody bothers. A big punter at the bar with long blonde corkscrew hair and a red coupon looks our and smiles, then turns back to watch the darts match. No one of the boys playing darts turns round. Is that 80? I point to Tommy's nearly empty glass. Aye. When I get to the bar, they've started again. I can hear them, soaking the barman and the corkscrew-headed cunt.
God, then. Date again. Gone then.
She's taunting him. Her voice is like a fucking ghost shrieking and that, but her lips didn't seem to be moving. You only ken it's her because the sound's coming for our there. The fucking pub's nearly empty, too. We could have sat anywhere. Of all the places to sit. He punches her in the face. Blood spurts for her mouth.
Hit us again, fucking big man. Gone then.
He does. She lets out a scream, then starts greeting, and hugs her face in her hands. He sits a few inches away from her, staring at her, eyes blazing, mouth hanging open. Lover's tiff, the corkscrew-headed cunt smiles, catching my eye. I smile back. I don't know why. I just seem to feel like I need friends. I'd never say this to any cunt, but I know that I've got problems with a bevy. When you're like that, your mates tend to keep out your road unless they've got problems with a bevy and all. I look over to the barman, an old guy with grey hair and a moustache. He shakes his head and says something under his breath. I take the pints back. Never, ever hit a lassie, my father often tell us. It's the lowest scum that do that, son, he says. This cunt that's been hitting the lassie, he fits that description. He's got greasy black hair, a thin white face and a black moustache. A wee ferret-faced fucker. I didn't want to be here. I just came out for a quiet drink. Only a couple, I promised Tommy, to get him to come. I've got the bevian under control. Just pints-like, nae naps. But this kind of thing makes us want a wee whiskey. Carol's away to her ma's. No coming back, she says. I came for a pint, but I might just get pished yet. Tommy's breathing heavily and looking tense as I sit down. Fucking telling you, sex, he says through grinding teeth. The lassie's eye is badly swollen and shutten. Her jaw's swollen and all, and her mouth is still bleeding. She's a skinny lassie, and she looks like she'd snap into pieces if he hit her again. Still, she carries on.
That's your answer. That's always your answer.
She spits out between sobs, angry and feeling sorry for herself at the same time.
Shut it. I'm telling you, shut the fuck up.
He's nearly choking with anger.
What are you gonna do? You fucking...
He seems ready to punch her again. That's enough, mate. Leave it. You're out of order, Tommy says to the guy.
It's none of your fucking business. You keep out of this.
The boy points at Tommy.
That's enough there. Come on now,
the barman shouts. The corkscrew-headed cunt smiles and a couple of the darts boys look over.
I'm making it my fucking business. What are you going to fucking do about it, eh?
Tommy leans forward.
Fuck's sake, Tommy, cool it, man. I half-heartedly grab his arm, thinking of the barman. He frees it with a quick shake.
You want your mouth punched, the boy says.
Think I'm going to just sit here and let you do it?
Fucking widow. Outside then, cunt. Come on!
Tommy sort of sings tauntingly. The boy's shiting hisself. He's right, too. Tommy's quite a tidy cunt.
Need of your business, he says.
No sounding so smart. Then the woman screams at Tommy,
That's my man! That's my fucking man you're talking to!
Tommy's too shocked to stop her as she leans over and digs her nails into his face. Everything happened after that. Tommy stood up and punched the boy in the mouth. The guy fell back off his seat onto the flare. I was up and straight over to the corkscrew-headed cunt of the bar. I tanned him in the jaw and grabbed a hood of his fucking curls, hauling his head down and booting him a couple of times in the face. I think he blocked one with his hands, and I doubt if the other hurt the cunt, because I'm wearing trainers. He swings with his arms, breaking my grip. Then he backs away, face beaming red and confused. I thought the cunt would have me then. He could have easily. But he just stands there and opens out his hands. What's the fucking score? It's a big joke to you, eh? I says. What are you talking about? The cunt seems genuinely scoobied. I'll phone the police. Get out of here, or I'll phone the police, the barman says, picking up the receiver for effect. Nae hassle in here now, boys, a big fat cunt for the darts team says, threateningly. He's still got his arrows in his hand.
It's nowt to do with me, mate, the corkscrew-headed cunt says to us. Maybe he got it wrong, like say, I tell him.
The woman and her man, them that caused the whole fucking problem, we were just out for a quiet drink, are skulking out the door.
Fucking bastards! That's my man! She shouts to us as they leave.
I feel Tommy's hand on my shoulder. Come on, Sex. Let's get out of here, he says. The fat cunt for the darts team, he's got a red shirt with a pub name, a dartboard crest and stew underneath it. He's still got plenty to say for hisself.
Didn't he come in here and cause bother, pal? This isn't your local, I ken your faces. Yous are mates with that red-headed cunt and that Williamson laddie, the one with a ponytail. These cunts are fucking drug-dealing scum. We didn't want that fucking trash in here.
We didn't deal fucking drugs, pal, Tommy says.
Aye, no in this fucking pub you didn't, the fat cunt goes.
Come on, Stu, it's no the boy's fault. It's that cunt Alan Venters and his bird. They're more into drugs than any cunt around here. You ken that, this other guy with thin fair hair says. They should be doing that kind of arguing in the house, no in a pub, another guy says. Domestic dispute, that's what it is. Shouldn't be bothering people that are just out for a drink with all that, Fairhair agrees.
The worst bit is getting outside. I'm shite myself in case we get follied. I'm walking fast while Tommy's hudding back.
Stall the now, he says. Fuck off, let's get out of here.
We move down the road. I look back, but nae cunt's left the pub. We see that mental couple up ahead of us. I want a wee word with that cunt, Tommy says, ready to start after them. A clock's a bus coming, a 22, that'll do us.
Fuck it, Tommy, here's a bus, come on!
We run to the stop and get on the bus. We go upstairs to the back, even though we're only gone a few stops.
How's my face? Tommy asks us when we sit down. Same as usual, a fucking mess.
That bird improved it, I tell him.
He looks at his reflection in the bus windy.
The fucking slag, he curses. The pair of fucking slags, I says.
That was fucking acey, Tommy hitting the boy likes, and no the bird, even if it was the bird that hit him. I've done loads of things in my time that I'm no proud of, but I've never hit a bird. What Carol says is shite. She says that I used violence on her, but I never hit her. I just held on to her so that we could talk. She says restraining is like hitting, it's still violence against her. I can't see that. All I wanted to do was to keep her there, to talk.
When I tell this to Rents, he says that Carol was right.
He says she's entitled to come and go as she wants. That's shite, though. All I wanted today was talk. Franco agreed with us. It's different when you're in a relationship, we tell Rents. I felt sick and nervous on the bus. Tommy might have felt the same, because we never spoke any more. The more, no. We'll be in some boozer with Rents, Beggar, Spud, Sick Boy and all them, boasting like fuck. Chapter 8. Speedy Recruitment. 1. Preparation. Spud and Renton were sitting in a pub in the Royal Mile. The pub aimed at an American theme bar effect, but not too accurately. It was a madhouse of assorted bric-a-brac. "Fucking weird man, though, Lexi. You and me getting sent for the same job, Ken," Spud said, slurping at his Guinness. "Fucking disaster for me, mate. I'm no wanting a fucking job. It'd be a fucking nightmare," Renton shook his head. "Yeah, I'm Lexi happy staying on the rock and roll the now, man, Ken. Trouble is, though, Spud, if you didn't try... If you blow the interview on purpose, the cunts tell the dole and these bastards stop your gyro. Happened to us in London. I'm on my last warning down there." "Yeah, me and all, man. What you gonna do, Lexi?" "Well, what you have to do is to act enthusiastic, but still fuck up the interview. As long as you come across as keen, they can't say fuck all. If we just be ourselves and be honest, they'll never gie either of us a fucking job. Problem is, if you just sit there and say nout to the cunts, they're straight onto the dole. They'll say, that cunt just can't be bothered." "It's hard for me, man. Ken, it's difficult to get together like that, like say, Ken. I get sort of like pure shy, Ken." Tommy gied us some speed. "What time's your interview again?" "No till 2:30, Lexi." "Well, I'm at 1. I'll see you back here at 2. I'll give you my tie to put on and some speed. Buck you up a bit. Let you sell yourself, Ken. So let's get to work on the apples." They placed the application forms on the table in front of them. Renton's was already half completed. A few entries caught Spud's eye.
"Hey, what's this, man, Lexi? George Herriot's. You went to Leithy, man."
"It's a well-known fact that you never stand a fucking chance of getting anything decent in this city if you didn't go to a posh school. Nay, why, though, will they offer a George Herriot's FP a portering job in a hotel? That's only for us plebs, so pit doing something like that. If they see Oggies or Craigie on your form, the cunts will offer you the job. Fuck, I'd better go. Whatever you do, dinna be late. See you back here in a bit."
2. Process. Mr. Renton, 1 p.m. The trainee manager who welcomed us was a mucho spotty punter in a sharp suit with dandruff on the shoulders like piles of fucking cocaine. I felt like taking a rolled up fiver to the cunt's tin flute. His biscuit-ass face and his plucks completely ruined the image the smarmy wee shite's trying to achieve. Even in my worst junk periods, I've never had a complexion like that. The poor wee bastard. This cunt is obviously along for the ride. The main man is the fat, stroppy-looking gadge in the middle. To his right, there's a coldly smiling dyke in a woman's business suit with a thick foundation mask who looks catalogue hideous. This is a heavy-duty lineup for a fucking porter's job. The opening gambit was predictable. The fat cunt gives us a warm look and says, "I see from your application form that you attended George Herriot's." "Right. Ah, those halcyon school days. It seems like a long time ago now." I might have lied on the apple, but I haven't at the interview. I did once attend George Herriot's. When I was an apprentice joiner at Gilslands, we did some contract work there.
"Old Fotheringham still doing his rounds."
Fuck. Select from one of two possibilities. 1, he is. 2, he's retired. No, too risky. Keep it nebulous.
God, you're taking me back now, I laugh.
The fat gadge seems to be happy with that. It's worrying. I feel that the interview is over and that these cunts are actually going to offer us the job. The subsequent questions are all pleasantly asked and unchallenging. My hypothesis is fucked. They'd rather gie a merchant school old boy with severe brain damage a job in nuclear engineering than gie a skimmy with a PhD a post as a cleaner in an abattoir. I've got to do something here. This is terrifying. Fatso sees us as a George Heriot's old boy falling on hard times, and he wants to help us out. A gross miscalculation, Renton, you raj. Thank fuck for Spotted Dick. A fair assumption to make, considering every other part of him seems to be covered in zits. He gets to nervously ask a question.
Mr. Renton, can you, explain, your employment gaps,
Can you explain the gaps between your words, you doss wee cunt? Yes, I've had a long-standing problem with heroin addiction. I've been trying to combat this, but it has curtailed my employment activities. I feel it's important to be honest and mention this to you as a potential future employer. A stunning coup de maître. They shift nervously in their seats.
Well, thank you for being so frank with us, Mr. Renton. We do have some other people to see, so thanks again, and we'll be in touch.
Magic. The gross git pulls down a wall of coldness and distance between us. They canny see I didn't try. 3. Process, Mr. Murphy, 2:30 p.m.
This speed is El Magnifico, Lifesey. I feel sorry, dynamic, can't Lifesey? I'm really looking forward to this interview. Rent says, sell yourself, Spud, and tell the truth. Let's go for it, cats. Let's get on.
I see from your application form that you attended George Heriot's. The old Heriot's FPs seem to be rather thick on the ground this afternoon.
Yeah, fat cat. Actually, man, I've got to come clean here. I went to Auggie's, St. Augustine's, like, see, then Craigie, Craig Royston, Ken. I just picked down Heriot's because I thought it would, like, help us get a job. Too much discrimination in this town, man, Ken, like, see. As soon as suit and tie dudes see Heriot's or Daniel Stewart's or Edinburgh Academy, they kind of get the hots, Ken. I mean, would you have said, like, say, I see you attended Craig Royston?
Well, I was just making conversation, as I did happen to attend Heriot's. The idea was to make you feel at ease, but I can certainly put your mind at rest with regards to discrimination. That's all covered in our new equal opportunities statement.
It's cool, man. I'm relaxed. It's just I really want this job, like, say. Couldn't he sleep last night, though? Worried I'd sort of blow it like she can. It's just when cats see Craig Royston on the form, they like to think, well, everybody that went to Craigie's a waster, right? But you can Scott Nisbet, the football player, like see. He's in the Huns, Rangers first team. Hudding his ain against all the expensive international signings as soon as he's can. That cat was a year below us at Craigie, man.
Well, I can assure you, Mr. Murphy, we're far more interested in the qualifications you gained rather than the school you or any other candidate went to. It says here that you got 5 O grades.
Whoa, Lifesey, gonna have to stop you there, Catboy. The O grades was bullshit, Ken. Thought I'd use that to get my foot in the door, showing initiative, Lifesey, Ken. I really want this job, man.
Look, Mr. Murphy, you were referred to us by the Department of Employment's Job Centre. There's no need for you to lie to get your foot in the door, as you put it.
Hey, whatever you say, man, you're the man, the governor, the dude in the chair, so to speak, Lifesey.
Yes, well, we're not making much progress here. Why don't you just tell us why you want this job so desperately that you're prepared to lie?
I need the high-rise, man.
Pardon? The what?
The poppy, like, say, eh? The bread, the dosh in that, Ken.
I see. But what specifically attracts you to the leisure industry?
Well, everybody likes to have a good time, a bit of enjoyment, Ken. That's leisure to me, man, I say. I like to see punters enjoy themselves, Ken.
Right. Thank you, the doll with the makeup mask says.
I could sort of, like, love that, babe.
What would you see as being your main strengths, she asks us.
Sense of humour, Lycie. You need that, man. Go to have it. Just go to have it, Ken.
I'll have to stop saying Ken so much. These dudes might think I'm a sorry pleb.
What about weaknesses?
The squeaky-voiced kitten in the suit asks. This is one spotted catboy. Rents wasn't he joking about the plukes. We have a real leopard cub here.
I suppose, man, I'm too much of a perfectionist, Ken. It's like, see, if things go a bit dodgy, I just can't be bothered, you know? I get good vibes about this interview the day, though, man, Ken.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murphy. We'll let you know.
No, man, the pleasure was mine. Best interview I've been at, Ken. I bounce across and shakes each cat by the paw.
4. Review. Spud met Renton back in the pub.
How did it go, Spud?
Good, Catboy, good. Possibly too good, like say. I think the dudes might be going to offer us the job. Bad vibes. One thing, though, man. You were right about this, Speed. I never seem to, like, sell myself properly in interviews. Cool times, compadre, cool times.
Let's have a drink to celebrate your success.
Fancy another dab at that, Speed? Wouldn't he say no, man? Would not say no likes.
Part 2. Relapsing. Chapter 9. Scotland takes drugs in psychic defence. I couldn't mention the Barrowland gig to Lizzie. No fucking chance of that, man, I can tell you. I'd bought my ticket when I got my gyro. That was me pure skint. It was also her birthday. It was the ticket or a present for her. No contest. This was Iggy Pop. I thought she'd understand.
You can buy fucking tickets for Iggy fucking Pop, but you can't buy me a fucking birthday present.
That was her response. See the cross I've got to fucking bear here, man. Pure madness, my man.
Didn't he get us wrong? You can see her point.
It's my own fault, though. Like I say, it's my own fault. Pure naive, that's Tommy here. Oh, fuck the wind. I lead with my chin all the time. If I was a wee bit more, what's the word, duplicitous, I would have said nothing about the tickets. I get too excited and pure open my big mouth far too wide. That's fearless Tommy gun for ye. Pure sucker. So, I haven't mentioned the gig since. The night before the event, Lizzie tells us that she pure fancies going to the pictures to see that the accused. She tells me that her that was in Taxi Driver is in it. I don't really fancy the film. Too much hype and publicity. That's really besides the point, though, if you ken what I mean, because I'm sitting here with the egg gig tickets in my tail. So I'm forced to mention Barrowland and the man. Canny the morn, I've got the Iggy Pop gig at Barrowland. Me and Mitch are gone through.
So, you'd rather go to a concert with Davy fucking Mitchell than the pictures with me?
That's pure Lizzie. The rhetorical question, the stock in trade weapon of birds and psychos. The issues become like a pure referendum on a relationship. My instinct is to be up front and say, yes, but that would probably mean bombing out Lizzie and I'm addicted to having sex with her. God, I love it. Dean it from behind as she groans softly, her pretty head resting on the yellow silk pillowcases in my gaff, the one Spud knocked for us out the British Home Store in Princess Street as a flatwarming present. I know I shouldn't be disclosing about our life, man,
But the image of her in bed is so strong that even her social coarseness and permanent sense of outrage fail to weaken it. I just pure wish that Lizzie could always be like she is in bed. I tried to murmur seductive apologies, but she's so harsh and unforgiving. Sweet and beautiful only in bed. The permanent viciousness of that expression will force out her beauty long before it should disappear. She calls me all the fuck-ups under the sun, then a few more for good measure. Poor old Tommy Gunn. No longer the greatest fighting soldier, now the greatest shiting soldier. It's no Iggy's fault. Can't he really blame the boy, Ken? How was he to know when he stuck the barrel and doon on his itinerary that he'd cause punters, where he doesn't even ken exist, all this hassle? Pure freaky when you think about it. Still, he's just another straw in the back of the camel. Lizzie's the pure steel woman. I'm happy, though. Even sick boy's jealous of me. Being Lizzie's boyfriend does confer status. But fame costs, as they say. By the time I leave the pub, I'm in no doubt of my lack of worth as a human being. At home, I take a line of speed and guzzle half a bottle of Merrydown. A pure canny sleep, so I phone Rents and ask him if he fancies coming round to watch a Chuck Norris video. Rents is off to London the morn. He spends more time doing there than he does back here. Something he do with gyro drops. The cunt's in some kind of a syndicate with these punters he met when he worked on the Harwich Hooker Holland cross-channel ferry years ago. He's going to see the egg in the town and country while he's in the smoke. We talk some grass and laugh our heads off as Chuck kicks fuck out of commie antichrists by the dozen, that constipated and stoical expression never leaving his face. Straight, this is unwatchable. Stoned is pure unmissable. The next day, I've got terrible mouth ulcers. Temps, Gav Temperley, who has moved into the flat, says that it serves me right. I'm killing myself with speed, he tells me. Temps says that I should have a job with my qualifications. I tell Temps that he sounds a lot more like my mother than any friend is entitled to. You can see Gav's point, though. He's the only one working for the fucking dole, and he's always getting tapped up by the rest of us. Poor Temps. I think me and Rents kept him awake last night as well. Temps resents dole moles having a good time, like all workies do. He pure resents being hit for info by Rents every day about claim procedures. It's to my mother's I go, to tap some cash for the gig. I need dosh for the train fare as well as drinking drugs. Speed's my drug. It goes well with drink, and I've always liked a drink. Tommy, the pure speed freak. My ma gives me a lecture on the dangers of drugs, telling me what a disappointment I've been to her, and to my dad, who, although he doesn't say much, really worries about me. Later, when he comes in from work, he says while my ma is upstairs that she mightn't say much, but really worries about me. Frankly, he tells me, he's really disappointed in my attitude. He hopes I'm no taking drugs, scrutinising my face as if he can tell. Funny, I know junkies, dope heads and speed freaks, but the most fucked up punters on drugs I know are pishheads. Like sex. That's Rab McLaughlin, the second prize. He's blown the fucking lot, man. I tap the cash and meet Mitch in the Hebs. Mitch is still seeing that lassie Gail. It's obvious, though, that he's no getting his leg hour. Listening to him for 10 minutes, you can pure read between the lines. He's in a pure Bevian mood, so I tap some cash off of him. We tan 4 pints of heavy then get on the train. I do 4 cans of export and 2 lines of speed during the journey to Glasgow. We down a couple in Sammy Dow's, then get a taxi to Lynch's. After another 2 pints, might have been 3, and another line of speed each in the bog, we sing a medley of eggy songs and go out to the Saracen Head in the Gallowgate, opposite the Barrowland. We drink some cider and wine chasers, dabbing frantically at salty speed in silver foil.
All I can see is a blurred neon sign when I leave the pub.
It is pure fucking freezing here. I kid you not, my man.
And we move towards the light and into the ballroom. We head straight for the bar. We have more drinks at the bar, although we can hear that Iggy started his set. I rip off my torn T-shirt. Mitch lines up some Morningside Speed, cocaine, on the Formica top table.
Then, something changes. He says something to us about money, which I don't catch, but I can feel the resentment. We have a heated, slurred argument, exchanging punches. I don't recall who strikes the first blow. We can't really hurt each other or feel the force on our fists or bodies. Too wasted.
Mind you, I step up a gear when I sees the blood flowing from my nose onto my bare chest and over the table. I get Mitch's hair in a grip and I'm trying to smash his head against the wall, but my hands are so numb and heavy. Someone pulls me off and throws us out the bar down a passage. I get up, singing, following the music into the packed hall of sweating bodies, pushing and shoving my way to the front. One guy headbutts me, but I ride it. No even stopping to acknowledge my assailant. Still pure jostling to the front. I'm pure jumping around at the front of the stage, a few feet away from the man. They are playing Neon Forest. Somebody slaps me on the back saying, "You are mental, by the way, my man." I sing out a twisting, pogoing mass of rubber. Iggy Pop looks right at me as he sings the line, "America takes drugs in psychic defence," only he changes America for Scatlin and defines us more accurately in a single sentence than all the others have ever done. I cease my St. Vitus dance and stand looking at him in stunned awe. His eyes are on someone else.
Chapter 10. The Glass. The problem with Begbie was, well, there's that many problems with Begbie. One of the things that concerned us most was the fact that you couldn't really relax in his company, especially if he'd had a bevy. I always felt that a slight shift in the cunt's perception of you would be sufficient to change your status from great mate into persecuted victim. The trick was to indulge the Raj without being seen to be too much of an obviously crawling sap. Even so, any overt irreverence took place within strictly defined limits. These boundaries were invisible to outsiders, but you gained an intuitive feel for them. Even then, the rules constantly changed with the cunt's moods. Friendship with Begbie was an ideal preparation for embarking on a relationship with a woman. It taught you sensitivity, an awareness of the other person's changing needs. When I was wee a lassie, I usually behaved in the same discreetly indulgent way. For a while, anyway. Begbie and myself had been invited to Gibbo's 21st. It was an RSVP job with partners. I took Hazel, and Begbie took his bird, June. June was up the stick, but wasn't he showing? We met in a pub in Rose Street, which was Begbie's idea. Only arseholes, wankers and tourists set fit in Rose Street. Hazel and me had a strange relationship. We'd been seeing each other on and off now for about 4 years. We have a kind of understanding that when I'm using, she just vanishes. The reason Hazel sticks around with me is because she's as fucked up as me. But rather than get it sorted out, she denies it. With her, it's sex that's at the root of it rather than drugs. Hazel and I seldom have sex. This is because I'm usually too junk to be bothered, and in any case, she's frigid. People say that there is no such thing as frigid women, only incompetent men. That's true to an extent, and I'd be last cunt under the sun to make any great claims for myself in that department. My abysmal junkie track record speaks for itself. The thing is that Hazel was fucked as a wee lassie by her father.
She once tell us this when she was really out of it. I couldn't be much use, cause I was out of it as well. When I tried to get her to talk about it later, she wasn't having it. Every time since has been a disaster. Our sex life always has been. After KB and me for ages, she'd eventually let me shag her. She'd been tensed up, gripping the mattress and gritting her teeth while I did what I had to do. Eventually, we just stopped. It was like sleeping with a surfboard. All the foreplay in the world couldn't make Hazel unwind. It just made her more tense, almost physically sick. Someday I hope she finds somebody who can do it for her. Anyway, Hazel and I had a strange pact. We used each other in a social sense. That's the only way to describe it, really. To project this veneer of normality. It's a great cover-up for her frigidity and my junk-induced impotence. Mama and Faither lapped Hazel up, seeing her as a potential daughter-in-law. If only they knew. Anyway, I had called up Hazel in order to get her to accompany us on this night out. Two fuck-ups together. The beggar had been bevying before we met up. He looked seedy and menacing done up in a suit, the way draft packs do, Indian ink spilling out from under cuffs and collar onto neck and hands. I'm sure beggars' tattoos move into the light, resentful at being covered up.
"How's the fucking rent, boy?"
he rasps loudly. Appropriateness has never been the cunt's strong point.
"All right, doll,"
he says to Hayes.
"Looking fucking smart. See this cunt here?"
he points at me.
"Style,"
he says enigmatically. Then he elaborates.
"This is a useless bastard, but he's got style. A man of wit, a man of class, a man not unlike my good self."
Begbie always constructed imaginary qualities in his friends, then shamelessly claimed them for himself. Hazel and June, who didn't really know each other well, wisely struck up a conversation, lumbering me with the beggar, the General Franco. I realised that it had been a long time since I'd drunk with Begbie on my own, with two other mates to offer occasional respite. Alone was stressful. To get my attention, Begbie smashes an elbow into my ribs with such ferocity that would be construed as an assault were it not between two companions. He then starts telling us about some gratuitously violent video he's been watching. Beggar insists on acting the whole fucking thing out, demonstrating karate blows, throttlings, stabbings, etc. on me. His explanation of the film lasts twice as long as the picture itself. I'm going to have a few bruises them on, and I'm not even pissed yet. We're drinking on a balcony bar, and our attention is caught by a squad of nutters entering the crowded pub below. They swagger in, noisy and intimidating. I hate cunts like that. Cunts like Begbie. Cunts that are into baseball batting every fucker that's different. Packies, poofs, and what have you. Fucking failures in a country of failures. It's nae good blaming it on the English for colonising us. I don't hate the English. They're just wankers. We are colonised by wankers. We can't even pick a decent, vibrant, healthy culture to be colonised by. No. We're ruled by effete arseholes. What does that make us? The lowest of the fucking low, the scum of the earth. The most wretched, servile, miserable, pathetic trash that has ever shat into creation. I don't hate the English. They just get on with the shite they've got. I hate the Scots. Begbie's gone on about Julie Matheson, who he used to have the hots for. Julie always hated him. I really liked Julie, maybe that's why. She was a really good punter. She had a bairn when she was HIV, but the bairn was all clear, thank fuck. The hospital sent Julie home in an ambulance with a bairn, with two guys dressed in sorry radioactive-proof suits, helmets, the lot. This was back in 1985. It had the predictable effect. The neighbours saw this, freaked, and burnt her out the house. Once you get tagged HIV, that's you fucked. Especially a lassie on a puff. Harassment followed harassment. Eventually, she had a nervous breakdown and with a damaged immune system, was easy prey for the onset of AIDS. It was last Christmas that Julie died. I never made the funeral. I was lying in my own puke on a mattress in Spud's gaff, too fucked to move. It was a shame, because Julie and me were good mates. We never shagged or nout like that. We both thought it would change things too much, like it does in male-female friendships. Sex generally makes them into real relationships or ends them. You go backwards or forwards after shagging, but maintaining the status quo is difficult. Julie looked really good when she started on smack. Mace Lassie's day. It seems to bring out the best in them. It always seems to gee before it takes back, with interest. Begbie's epitaph to Julie is, "Fucking wasty a good bit of Fanny." I fight back the urge to tell him what a fucking wasty a silver bullet he'd be. I try not to show my anger. It'll achieve nothing except a burst mouth for me. I go downstairs to get another roundup. These draft pack cunts are at the bar, jostling each other and every other fucker. Getting served is a nightmare. A mosaic shell is scar tissue in Indian ink. I presume that there's some cunt inside it is screaming, "Double vody and coke! Double fucking vody and coke then, cunt!" at the nervous bar staff. I focus on the whiskey bottles on the gantry, trying everything in my power to avoid making eye contact with this Raj. It's like my eyes have a life of their own, involuntarily turning to the side. My face reddens and tingles, as if in anticipation of a fist or a bowl. These cunts are damaged fucking goods, nutty boys of the highest order. I take the drinks back. The nips first for the women, then the pints. Then it happens. All I did was put a pinty export in front of Begbie. He takes one fucking gulp out of it, then he throws the empty glass for his last pint straight out of the balcony, in a casual backhand motion. It's one of the chunky panelled glasses with a handle, and I can see it spinning through the air out of the corner of my eye. I look at Begbie, who smiles, while Hazel and June look disorientated, their faces reflecting my own crippling anxiety. The glass crashes down on this draft-packed head, which splits open as he falls to his knees. The boys' mates assume battle stances, and one of them charges over to this other table and panels this innocent cunt. Another gubs some Per Gadge carrying a tray of drinks. Begbie's on his feet and racing down the stair. He's right in the middle of the flare. "Boy's been fucking glassed. Nae cunt leaves here until I find out we flung that fucking glass." He's barking orders at innocent couples, shouting instructions at the bar staff. Thing is, the draft pack cunts are lapping this up. "It's all right, mate. We can handle this," Double Vody and Coke says. I can't hear what Begbie says, but it seems to impress Double Vody. Then the beggar goes to the barman. "You! Phone the fucking police!" "No, no, nae police!" shouts one of the draft-pack psychos. These cunts have obviously got records the length of your arm. The pair cunt behind the bar shiting his cell, no kenning what to do. Begbie stands erect, neck muscles tensed. His glare sweeps around the bar and up to the balcony. "We saw anything! Yous can't see anything!" he shouts at a group of guys. Merchant school Murrayfield-type cunts who are crapping themselves. "No," one guy wobbles out. I gets down, telling Hayes and June no to move for the balcony bar. Begbie's like a psychopathic detective out of an Agatha Christie whodunit, cross-examining every cunt. He's blowing it. It is so fucking obvious. I'm down there, sticking a fucking bar towel on the draft-pack split head, trying to stem the blood. The cunt just growls at us, and I dinna ken whether that's I'm showing gratitude or ready to stomp my balls, but I carry on.
One fat cunt for the group of psychos goes up to this other group of guys at the bar and sticks the heat on one of them. The place goes up. Lassies scream, guys issue threats, push each other and exchange blows as the sound of breaking glass fills the air. This boy's white shirt is saturated with blood as I push through some bodies to get back up the stairs to Hazel and June. Some cunt gubs us on the side of the face. I'd half saw it for the corner of my eye and moved away in time, so I didn't get the full force of it. I turn round and this Raj is saying, "Come ahead, Wido, come ahead." "Way to fuck you, Raj," I say, shaking my head. This gadget's ready to come, but his mate grabs his arm, a good thing, because I'm no ready for him. The cunt looks a wee bit tidy, like he could punch his weight. "Fucking stay out of it, Malky, it's fuck all to do with that boy," his mate says. I move on smartly. Hayes and June come down the stairs with us. Malky, my assailant, is panelling some other cunt now. A gap has cleared in the middle of the flare and I steer Hayes and June through it towards the door. "Mind the birds, pal," I say to these two guys who are about to swedge and one dies for the other one, allowing us to slip past. Outside the bar in the Rose Street precinct, Begbie and this other cunt, it's double body, are booting fuck out of this paired bastard on the deck. "Frank!" June gives out a blood-curdling scream. Hazel's edging away from me, tugging at my hand. "Franco, come on!" I shout, grabbing his arm. He stops to examine his work, but brushes my grip off. He turns to look at us, and for a minute, I think he's going to panel us. It's like he doesn't see us, doesn't he recognise us? Then he goes, "Rents, nae cunt fucks with the YLT. They've got to fucking learn that, Rents. They've got to fucking learn that." "Cheers, pal," says Double Voddy, Franco's accomplice in slaughter. Franco smiles at him and boots the cunt in the bars. I felt it. "I'll gi' you fucking cheers, you cunt," he sneers, smacking Double Voddy in the face, knocking him out. A white tooth flies like a bullet out of the guy's mouth and lands a few feet away on the precinct tiles. "Frank, what are you doing?" June shrieks. We're pulling the cunt down the road as police sirens fill the air. That cunt and his fucking mates back there. That's the cunts that fucking stabbed my brar," he shouts indignantly. June looked beaten down. That was bullshit. Beggar's brother, Joe, was stabbed in a fight in a pub in Nidri years ago. The fight was his own making, and he wasn't badly hurt. In any case, Franco and Joe hated each other. Still, the incident had provided Begbie with the spurious moral ammunition he needed to justify one of his periodic drink and angst-fueled wars against the local populace. He'd get his one day. Nothing was surer. I just didn't want to be around when he did. Hazel and I fell behind Franco and June. He's wanted to go. "There's something wrong with him. Did you see that guy's head? Let's get out of here." I found myself lying to her to justify Begbie's behaviour. Fucking horrible. I just couldn't handle her outrage and the hassle that went with it. It was easy to lie, as we all did with Begbie in our circle. A whole Begbie mythology had been created by our lies to each other and ourselves. Like us, Begbie believed that bullshit. We played a big part in making him what he was. Myth. Begbie has a great sense of humour. Reality. Begbie's sense of humour is solely activated at the misfortunes, setbacks and weaknesses of others, usually his friends. Myth, Begbie is a hard man. Reality, I would not personally rate Begbie that highly in a square go. Without his assortment of Stanley knives, baseball bats, knuckle dusters, beer glasses, sharpened knitting needles, etc., myself and Mace Cunts are too shite scared to test this theory, but the impression remains. Tommy once exposed some weaknesses in Begbie in a square go. Gave him a good run for his money, did Tam. Mind you, Tommy's a tidy cunt, and Begbie, it has to be said, came out the better of the two. Myth, Begbie's mates like him. Reality,
They fear him. Myth: Begbie would never waste any of his mates. Reality: his mates are generally too cagey to test out this proposition, and on the odd occasion they have done so, have succeeded in disproving it. Myth: Begbie backs up his mates. Reality: Begbie smashes fuck you innocent wee daft cunts ways accidentally spill your pint or bump into you. Psychopaths who terrorise Begbie's mates usually do so with impunity, as they tend to be closer mates of Begbie's than the punters he hangs about with. He kens them all through approved school, prison and the casuals networks, the Freemasonry that bands share. Anyway, these myths gie us the basis to rescue the night. Look, Hazel, I ken Franco's uptight. It's just that they guys pities Brad Joe in a life support machine. They're a close family. Begbie is like junk, a habit. My first day at primary school, the teacher says to us, "You will sit beside Francis Begbie." It was the same story at secondary. I only did well at school to get into an O-level class to get away from Begbie. When Begbie was expelled and sent to another school en route to Pullman, my performance declined, and I was pit back into the non-certificate stream. Still, name your Begbie. Then, when I was apprenticed as a chippy with a Gorgie builder, I goes along to Telford College to do my national certificate modules in joinery. I sat down to my chips in the cafeteria when Whey comes along, but that cunt Begbie, with a couple of other psychos. They were on this specialist course in metalwork for problem teenagers. The course seemed to teach them to manufacture their own sharp metal weapons of destruction rather than have to buy them for the Army and Navy stores. When I left my trade and went to college for A-levels, then on to Aberdeen University, I half expected to see beggars at the freshers' ball, beaten to a pulp some four-eyed middle-class wanker he imagined was staring at him. He really is a cunt of the First Order. No doubt about that. The big problem is, he's a mate and all. What can you do? We quicken our step and follow them down the road. A quartet of fucked up people together.
Chapter 11. A Disappointment.
I minded the cunt. Fucking sure I did. I used to think he was a fucking hard cunt back at Craigie, ken? He fucking hung around with Kev Stronach in that crowd. Fucking bams. Didn't he get us wrong, like? I thought the cunt was fucking sound. But I mind, there was one time some boys asked the cunt where he fucking came from. This boy goes, "Jakey." That was the cunt's name, like. "Are you for fucking Granton or Royston?" The cunt goes, "Granton is Royston. Royston is Granton." The bastard went right fucking down in my estimation after that, ken. That was back at the fucking school, though, ken. Fucking yonks ago now. Anyway, the other fucking week there, I was doing the fucking volley with Tommy and Sex, ken Rab, the second prize likes. This cunt, this Jakey cunt, this big fucking Raj boy for Craigie, he comes into the pub. He never fucking lets on to us. I mind he's smashing loads of fucking crabs to bits with stains with that cunt, down the fucking harbour, ken. He never fucking recognised us. Didn't he fucking ken us for Adam? That cunt. Anyway, the cunt's mate, this fucking plucky-faced wido, goes to put his fucking money down for the boys at the table, for the pool, ken. I says to him, "That cunt's fucking Nick's mate," pointing to this wee specky gadge. "This wee cunt's got his fucking name up on the board, but he would have just fucking sat there and said fuck all if I hadn't fucking spoke like." I was fucking game for a swedge. If the cunts had have fucking come ahead, it was nae problem like. I mean, you ken me. I'm no the type of cunt that goes looking for fucking bother likes, but I was the cunt with the fucking pool cue in my hand, and the plucky cunt could have the fat end of it in his puss if he wanted like. Obviously, I was carrying my fucking chib and all too fucking right. Like I says, I didn't go looking for fucking bother, but if any lippy cunt wants to start, I'm fucking game. So, the wee specky cunt's put his fucking dough in, and he's racking up in that, ken. The plucky cunt just sits down and says fuck all. I kept my eye on the hard cunt. Or at least he was a fucking hard cunt at the school, Ken. The cunt never says a fucking word. Kept his fucking mouth shut all right, the cunt. Tommy says to us, "Hey, Franco, is that boy getting lippy?" You can't, Tommy. He's no fucking shy, that cunt.